Hi guys, welcome to Dead by Tomorrow Interviews. My name is Daniel Winter and my co-host is Andrew Monroe. As we explore different topics that are worth thinking about today, we want to bring in guests to share their own unique perspective. We hope you enjoy hearing from our guests as much as we enjoy talking to them. Hi guys, and welcome back to Dead by Tomorrow. This is not your normal intro host, because your normal intro host, Andrew Monroe, is going to be the subject of the podcast today. We're going to be interviewing Andrew. We're going to be finding out all of his deepest, darkest secrets. Hopefully we can get him to slip up and admit something that he didn't want to on a recording so that we can hold it over him forever. But in reality, I'm really excited to just turn the microphone, so to speak, on to Andrew, dive in a little bit more on some of his mindset, some of his decision-making, maybe some fun stuff along the way. So like when we did the interview with me, obviously you guys know Andrew. We've been doing this podcast for a while, written a book. Maybe you'll learn something a little bit new. So Andrew, welcome on to your podcast. How's your day going?
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for inviting me. It's been a good day. My family is in town for Christmas. A little early, but we went and got coffee this morning. Did some last minute Christmas shopping over at Target, because it is not a weekend if we do not go to Target. And I just got a win in Apex probably 10 minutes ago. So that was nice. And yeah, it's been a good day.
Yeah, that sounds like a great day. Well, to kick us off, I'm going to start super deep with our questions. I'm not going to give you a softball to begin. And part of that is because we're going to do a little experiment. Experiment's too strong of a word. But I want to start out talking a little bit about just some identities, because I'm curious, as we go through some other questions and stuff that's, you know, a little bit lighter, if some of what you identify as identities kind of shape some of those little things. So maybe it'll be an interesting one for you to even listen back to and maybe identify some things that you hadn't before. So without further ado, what would you say is your most core identity, or some of your most core identity characteristics?
That is a tough one. So I'm going to keep it with three, and we're going to start with words, because I think words are a little bit easier to work with. So, valor, I'm sure a lot of people have heard it. It's kind of an interesting, the definition is probably not what a lot of people think. And to me, that's kind of one of the words that I kind of shape my life around, is trying to be, you know, full of valor. And I'm sure there's a better way to use that noun. But basically, to me, being courageous is a big, I guess, desire. And so it doesn't necessarily mean I do intelligent things. If the opportunity arises to do something I'm afraid of or that challenges me, I kind of lean into it. So that's one of the words. We'll go with two more. One is magic. The second or third, depending on how you're counting right now, would probably be panache. So panache is Cyrano de Bergerac, was the introduction to that word. And I loved that book and I loved the concept. He was also a guy that really dug into valor. So magic is kind of a silly one, but I think it's a fun word. To me, magic is kind of this core feature in my personality, or at least a desired core personality, that I try and bring creativity and challenge, you know, people's preconceived notions. And I know that's not the definition of magic, but that's kind of what I think about in my head is magic, is the sense of wonder and, you know, a tilt in your perspective. So that creative way to look at different things, bring a little magic out there. So there's magic, and it's a sense of style, kind of a bold in your face, aggressive style. I kind of dig that. So that's one of the things I try and go for, is maybe not exactly going against the grain, but definitely being sure to follow my own path and not falling for what might be considered mainstream or the standard move. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing something mainstream, but the panache reminds me not to do something because it's mainstream. If I want to go that route, I need to be sure that's who, you know, that matches up with my values, not because everybody else is doing it. So does that cover some core identity? So that help start this off?
Yeah, for sure. And so when you think about Valor, magic, and panache, are those characteristics that you came out of the womb having? Are those things that you sort of cultivated and grown over the years? Are those things that others have spoken into you? You know, where is some of the origin story to those identities?
So I'm definitely on the side of the fence of nurture. I think there are some things that are definitely natural or even genetically inclined in a lot of people. But when it comes to your personality and your principles and your values, obviously, to me, that is purely nurture. So they're definitely learned. I think a lot of it came with reading far too many books. And it also had to do with the people I grew up with. How my family interacted with me, what people kind of spoke into existence about me, up until this day have shaped me. It's definitely a nurture people have either subconsciously or consciously, influenced that in me.
I think nurture is huge. I think some of the nature can sort of be there. There can be a little bit of that sort of starting point that maybe causes people to nurture certain things, or you to nurture certain things in yourself, and then it becomes more. But sometimes there are things that maybe naturally we weren't that great at. You just see somebody and you're like, wow, that's amazing. I want to, have more valor in my life, or panache, or whatever it is. And then that nurture can really take over. And so, again, thinking through some of those, is there something maybe within the past week where you know you made that decision with one of those three things in mind of, all right, I've got this path in front of me. What do I do? I'm going to default to the choice that demonstrates valor or whatever it is.
I wish I had in the last week a much more meaningful, so to say, answer for this. But the first thing that jumps to mind is I got some new pants. They are these Indigo Slub Threes pants. And I'm saying that probably completely wrong, but they are these pants that look kind of goofy. And they're like this weird mix between sweatpants and like work pants almost. It's like an upgraded sweatpant, I guess you could say. And they have a goofy design. And Shalomi does not like them. but I love them. They are this bold, very unique pattern, this like deep indigo blue with all these different like blues and whites traced in between it. They're kind of loud. They're not like loud, like flames printed on the sides kind of pants, but they're definitely a bold color choice and a bold pattern for me. So that was one of the things where the panache comes in, where I'm like really leaning into these sweatpants that I've been wearing a lot this week, actually, because it's been cold and they're warm. And they just, I think they look like a blast, and have not had great feedback on them, but I'm still digging them.
No, I think that's a really good example. I mean, the whole idea between core identity, I feel, is that they show up in all of the little things. And maybe you had a major life decision happen within the past week, but that's probably not a normal week for any of us.
Yeah, it goes back to the little things where, the way you do small stuff, if you're brave enough to wear the goofy sweatpants or that too bold shirt, or, to dress in an elevated style compared to the rest of the community you're in, or, maybe it's the other direction. I know you rock this. Daniel's not afraid to wear very basic clothing to just about any event. And that is actually something I suck at. Hey, this is formal dining. I'm wearing something formal, and I lack the bravery there to wear a t-shirt to it. But the way you do the little things, translate them to the big stuff. If you make those big life choices, if you're not used to, leaning into your personality, it's easier to do what is expected of you or what other people think you should do instead of what you probably know is the actual choice you should make.
Yeah. And I think something that happens to a lot of us is we have moments of sort of identity crisis where, for whatever reason, one of our things that we felt was core to who we are gets stripped away for one reason or the other. I mean, it could be, I know a lot of people put a lot of identity in work. And so obviously losing a job can really cause you to lose out on a part of your core identity. For you, maybe it's a situation where you want to act in valor, but you are just petrified in fear of a decision in front of you. And no matter how much you try to rewire your brain, like that drives your decision making. And I think that can be, you know, a blow to some of your identity. So is there a scenario where you feel like that's come up where you've had to, you know, cope with that and work through something like that?
I'll give you one that I'm still dealing with, actually, and I still haven't figured out if I made the right choice or not. So this is not necessarily, I for sure was like, oh, I didn't choose the, you know, valor, or I didn't choose panache, but it goes in with valor. And basically it was a year ago, a little less than a year ago, my father came to me. He was like, hey, I need you to come back to work for me. And everything I'd heard, you know, about pursuing your own dreams and that kind of thing was like, you know, hey, people are going to send offers your way. They're going to have all these great sounding opportunities, and you need to be strong enough to stay the path. And for me, I ended up taking the offer and going back to help my dad with his business and do all that kind of jazz. And so that cost me a lot on my, so to say, passions that I was pursuing and what I'd kind of quit Plains Internet to chase down. It was financially pretty beneficial, and I still learned plenty of stuff, got some new skills throughout the year, and I still got to work on some other passions like this podcast, and there's other aspects of my life that still gained from that. But in the end, the reason I left in the first place, I didn't really get to pursue my attempted writing career in that marketing agency that I really wanted to spin up. So to me, it was almost like I took the coward's way out, because there was either the uncertain future with uncertain amounts of money, or there was a certain future where I already knew kind of how that process has worked and how to make things better. And there was a definitive financial incentive that I knew, okay, I'm going to make this much money. So to me, it still bugs me that I took that option. At the same time, sometimes you got to cut your losses, or you're going to take a break. We've talked about that, I think it was just the last episode, where you have to say no to certain opportunities to better the people around you, better yourself, and, you know, come back down the road to try and re-pursue them. So that's kind of what I'm hoping happened. But right now, I still don't know. I don't know if I took the coward's path or not, which really bugs me.
Well, and this is the second time that you've gone to work for your dad, right?
Yes. Path twice. So,
well, I mean, I am curious, though, having made that decision twice and now being a year into the second one, I know you just said maybe you don't have it all figured out yet, but I am curious if there is still this question mark of, was it counter to identity, or is it a situation where maybe there's other motivations, some other identities that played into that? You know, that is something that I feel like it's worth analyzing, because that is a big life decision. So like you said, it could be a situation of just maybe leaning into the unknown is scary. Maybe it was sort of a decision that was based on cowardice. Maybe that is the case. Or maybe it was, you know, a situation where you were trying to be strategic about the path that is in front of you, and just, you know, thinking about, you know, how you still could ultimately flip this into being something that was a valor or a panache decision. Or, you know, a third option could be that maybe there is another aspect of your identity that trumped those other ones at the time, which, you know, could be, I don't know what that could be. You know, it just kind of depends on what you thought through when making that decision. So yeah, I expect you to have it all figured out in the next 30 seconds.
Well, so like anything in real life, it's almost never as cut and dry as we try and present certain choices on our podcast. And in this case, I know some of the major factors that came in to influence what I was doing. First, this is going to sound maybe a little ridiculous. I really, 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 really can't say no to somebody asking for help. If someone's like, hey, Andrew, can you help me with this? I just, my little hero complex from reading too many fantasy novels or watching too many action movies, whatever it is, kicks in, and it is near impossible for me to say no. And if I do say no to somebody asking for help, I just feel awful. It eats me up forever. it's terrible. So that was the first factor, was my dad presented as like, hey, I need help. And that is really hard for me to say no to. The second factor was he offered me a lot of money. And part of what I was trying to do requires a, you know, you need to be financially solid for, or be able to float yourself for a while. And having additional funds would help with that. So that was another factor. On the same vein, I had been doing the self-employed thing for a year. And it had been a very rough year. I made almost no money doing it. COVID had hit roughly 30 days after after I started. So my timing was really off, and it made it very difficult to start up, so to say, a new business. And I had told myself, okay, you get this year, and if at the end of the year you haven't at least started generating some form of a steady income, you've got to go do something else. And this is where it gets a little dicey. You know, COVID did not just last 3 months or 6 months. We were still long into it. And, you know, that was a year ago, and we're still rolling with it. So and part of it, I feel like I didn't get a fair shot at trying to start. But that said, I hit that end year mark, and I was dealing with the self-promise of, hey, months to deal with life. And if you can't kick it into gear in 12 months, you're not trying hard enough, and you need to go find something less risky. And at the same time, that's when my dad came asking for help, offering lots of money. So there's a mix of those factors. Along with it, we had a expiration date on the help. We agreed to basically a year. It started in February 1st. So at the end of January, technically my year is up. And then I need to decide what I'm going to do there, if we're going to keep going forward or if I need to do something else. So part of me was saying, okay, I can go do this thing that's going to help in a lot of different ways, both me and other people. And then I can still come back around and try again. Thinking COVID would have been long gone by that point. So we'll see. So there's all these little factors, and there's plenty of other stuff. You know, there's relationships, there's all this stuff. What I'm trying to say, though, is there's a lot of really good positive reasons that I wanted to do it. But that doesn't change that there was a lot of fear in the unknown as well, that more than likely helped influence me going towards or gravitating towards certain positive aspects of that path I took. So it's never cut or dry. Yeah.
Well, and what I see from some of that decision, and full disclosure, you know, I have no degrees in psychology. I can't even claim to be Britta and be like, you know, psychology student or anything like that. But I'm glad that you brought up the fact that you really struggle to say no to somebody that needs help. Because if I were to come on and say, all right, Andrew, what are some of the things that I see as core identities? I feel like that's one of the ones I would put really high up there, is that you're somebody that really wants to come through for other people. You really want to, with your friends, with your family, be that person that's really reliable, really trustworthy, and somebody that, you know, is a go-to type of person. I'd put that very high on your identities. And so to me, I feel like with that decision, and we talked through it together a fair bit at the time, I feel like there was a little bit of this clash of that desire that you do have, that I think is a really big part of your personality, but then also kind of seeing that making that decision might be in contrast to some of the other things that are parts of your personality and parts that you really want to feed into, you know, being the, especially kind of the panache side of things and kind of blazing your own trail. And so you had a little bit of this sort of conflict in either decision you made kind of was partially true to you, but also partially not true to you. And I think those are some of the really tough decisions to work through, but I think you did it well.
Yeah, I don't really know how to describe the follow-through kind of thing, but I kind of lump it under the valor side of life, because to me it's kind of a doing things that you don't want to do. Because as much as I need to help people, I almost never actually want to, which no offense to anyone. It's just, hey, can you help me move? I don't actually want to get up, go help somebody move things, and then, you know, go my own way. Like, it's a chunk of time. It's not something I actually want to do. It's just something that, like, part of me is like, oh, you have to do this because that's part of that valor kind of thing. At least that's how I see it. So I appreciate the recognition, and I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, of course. Okay. I want to jump into a little bit more of a fun question now, even though I think it had some serious implications. I actually asked this of Hillary the other day, and we had a long conversation about it. So if you were in a situation where you could travel back in time 10 years with all the knowledge that you have right now, but you lose 10 years from your overall life expectancy, or you can jump forward.
Man, I want to hear how this conversation went for you and Hillary at some point, because that sounds like it must have been fun. So, to me, this is easy. I would 100% do the 10 years forward, $5 million in the bank, and an extra 10 healthy. And here's why. Let me give my rationale before I am burned at the stake if I'm answering this wrong. So first, time is, to me, one of the more important aspects out there. Like, that is your most important currency. So giving up 10 years for what is kind of an implied, like, hey, you're 10 years ago, you can go invest in Bitcoin and have hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars if you are smart. That's what you're saying, is you trade out 10 years for billions of dollars. And on one hand, that's not a terrible trade. And a lot of people, I do think, would take that trade. But $5 million is a trade. And an additional 10 years of life is vastly more important to me than $10 million. And along with that, you never know what's going to happen. In 10 years, that might get me that much closer to us having better health and longevity techniques. I know that's something that a lot of modern medicine is working on. End goal is maybe not like extending our lives, you know, super far. I have heard numbers like we're aiming for, you know, average life expectancy to be 130 years in the next, you know, 50, 60 years. That would be cool. But the problem they want to fix with it first is they want you to have a good 130 years or good 100 years. They don't want you to be hitting 75, 85, 95 and basically losing half your mind, half your mobility or more. So to me, getting that extra 10 years gets me that much closer to having a much better, you know, last quarter of life. And $5 million is all you really need, honestly. I mean, if you go throw $5 million into the stock market, you're living off of basically $100,000 worth of dividends a year. And that's awesome. And the money's going to keep growing. And especially if you're talking about another 40 years, assuming no economic crisis, you're good to go. So that's why I go that direction.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The only thing that would keep me from saying 100% yes, even though I probably would make the same decision, is the fact that you're basically missing the next 10 years. Whatever happens over the next 10 years, you're effectively asleep for. And that's kind of hard, because in this trade-off, you, like, for me, if I think about, wow, I don't see ages 1 through 11 for Riley, that'd be pretty hard. But then I guess I have to think the other way of, okay, if I went back in time 10 years, yes, I don't miss anything. I get to relive some things that were pretty fun, maybe make some better decisions. But then I miss 10 years at the end, like later on in Riley's life and grandchildren and some of those types of things. So yeah, that's what I think about, is what am I missing out on in terms of life? Because either direction, you're right. Like, basically money-wise, you'll be okay. If you went back in time, like, you'll really be okay if you're smart with money.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's been a while, Hillary, 10 years for the, well, that was kind of my guess, because you and I think very similarly. So I assumed you were probably going to do the same thing I did. And generally it seems like the women in our lives think drastically different than we do. And it could, at least in my case, I bet if I go and ask Shalomi, I would almost guarantee she'd do the go backwards in time. And I just assumed that Hillary would probably be the same way, where I think she thinks differently than you do. I see it. And this is one of those things that definitely would be how certain people, there's just this personality divide of these people do this thing because it's a guaranteed money and no FOMO, basically, versus, you know, I'm basically gambling, and you like to gamble as well. And our women do not gamble. And that's what it is. We're gambling on a better outcome down the road than a sure win. Because going back in time, that's a sure win. And you lose something at the end, but it's a sure win. Going forward, $5 million is nice, but maybe the American dollar is not worth much in 10 years. So
that's true. And,
you know, maybe you're completely out of your skill set. So it's a gamble going forward. So this is definitely like a gambler's dilemma.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And so I figured you would pick going forward 10 years, because I know you, and you talked a little bit about medical advancements, but one thing I'm curious about, because I think amongst our friend group, you more than anybody else is kind of looking at different tech enhancements that are coming and are excited about it. So what future tech would you be most excited about and kind of hope has come to fruition in that next 10 years or in your expanded lifetime that you'd have in that scenario?
So obviously longevity, health stuff, I think that is something that we aren't really, unless you're in the right kind of areas of life, that's not necessarily what anybody's talking about, where a bunch of advancements are being made. And it's because they're not really big. It's not like we have cured cancer, which is big. But the thing is we're making all these really, really small incremental steps all over the place. And by kind of chipping away at the health system as a whole, and by health system, I mean our human understanding of what makes us tick and what keeps us alive and what kills us, we're slowly chipping away at death, I guess you could say. And it's these tiny, tiny little chips, just like a mason with marble, a stone sculptor. And they're just these little tiny, tiny things. And it's not as big as these big booms that we expect from technology. It's not like the internet's been reinvented. We're making all these little small changes. And I think those are going to add up over time, where 10, 20 years down the road, we're just going to be really, really good at keeping people alive and in a positive way. Right now, I honestly think that we don't keep people alive in a positive way most of the time. There's a lot of stuff where we do something really well for, or really good for someone that 50 years ago, we couldn't do. But I think going forward, we're going to actually have, not only are we going to be saving lives, but we're going to be increasing life quality. Right now, a lot of saving lives comes with a decrease in life quality, sometimes to an unacceptable degree in my mind. So I think that's going to get fixed. We might not actually live longer, but I think we're going to have higher quality lives unless COVID-27 wipes us. So that's one thing. I think wearables are going to get really interesting. I'm hoping so. I love the idea of an AR integration kind of glasses thing where you ditch the cell phones and we have basically Google lenses perfected. And we've got AR overlays and just a whole slew of small day-to-day tasks that are either made a lot more simple or a lot better. And there's going to be some trade-offs. We talked about this just the other day a little bit. I think there's going to be some really big issues with people disconnecting, and we already rely on technology whole lot. I think some people, it's going to be such a crutch that if their lenses break, their glasses, those smart glasses that I think are coming, if they break or if they lose internet technology, or maybe they don't leave their city because they lose internet while they're driving or they're flying, I think that could become a problem. But in general, a lot of stuff like cooking and manual skills that, you know, being able to follow a YouTube video at the same time you're doing it and it's overlaid in AR over what you're doing, I think that's going to really, really increase some quality of life stuff for people. So I'm pretty excited for that. Part of the health thing I hope for, this is still completely sci-fi, but I'm really hoping for some nanomachines that we can start replacing or at least supplementing our immune system with, where things like cancer are going to be eliminated because we're going to have smarter than our immune system technology just run around in our bloodstream taking care of us. So that'd be pretty cool. I could go on all day, but we'll stop there.
Yeah. It's things that they can, like, it can be very cool. There can also be a dark side to it. So yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see what the next few years look like. And something I have to try to remind myself of is some of the more childlike wonder I had when I was younger about some of that stuff and not being super pessimistic about it, which I tend to be more so getting older.
Yeah. Imagine 20 years ago when if you would have thought about technology and someone was like, hey, in down the road, we're going to have the ability to do virtual meetings with people, you know, metaverse stuff. I mean, you're going to have these goggles that let you see and interact with people with haptic feedback, the whole nine yards, as if you were in person with them. You can do it from anywhere in your home. We would have been blown away. And now it's here. We're like, well, I don't know if I like that. The headset's expensive. It's not perfect. The graphics aren't great. You know, we have all of our complaints. I don't even have one. I don't have like a Oculus Quest or, you know, whatever they've got going on. But
virtual reality headsets. I don't have one, and it's such cool technology that I would have thought was amazing 20 years ago. And it was completely off the radar for most people. Like, that was, it's the future. We are in the future, and we have all the technology to do cool stuff in virtual reality, and we're just kind of okay with it now. So, heck, we have drones that you can fly around now. We have personal drones that you can fly around. They're unbelievably expensive, and the FAA is not a big fan of them. But, you know, those are just hurdles. Technically, if we had the money and the drive, we'd go get ourselves a little, you know, Star Wars speed racer kind of thing. And that is just cool. They just don't look as sharp as we want them to. And they're not as affordable as we want them to. And they're not as easy to drive around as we'd hope they were. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I'm going to pivot a little bit. I think I'm going to save some of the, do like a lightning round at the end with some fun questions. But
okay.
I am very curious to hear your answer to this question, because it's something that I think about fairly often. So I would imagine you have too. But what is something you would say that you are better than 99% of the population at?
It's funny you bring that up, because I was actually talking about that at work the other day, because I think everyone believes that there's this thing they have, and I'm like, well, it's the thing they hold on to that gives them hope. They're like, well, I might be having trouble with this, or I might be having a bad day at work, or blah, 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 blah. But I'm probably the best person at this thing. And it might be something little like doing dishes or making tamales or whatever it is. But I think everybody has something that they think that they're in, like, that top 1% of the population. And so with that knowledge, I know I'm not an exception, which means I also know I'm not actually the top of anything for anyone. But if I was to say what is my leading strength for being in that higher percentage of the population, like, what am I edging people out on? It would probably be the ability to dive into something, kind of like a, I don't know the proper term for it, but being able to follow through on a challenging task. It'd either be that, or it would be my cross-dimensional problem-solving skills, being able to take a lot of disparate information and extrapolate it into something that creates a solution. And sometimes those solutions are completely unnecessary, but that is something I think I do pretty well at, which is either, you know, working through a problem or coming up with solutions for problems that are original and, you know, pretty special, I like to think. What would yours be?
I struggle to nail down a particular thing. So what you described as a cross-dimensional problem solving, I would probably call transformational thinking, just based on some brain health class things that I've done, because they describe rote problem solving as basically, if you are needing to write a better computer program, then you get better at it by, like, learning other computer programs, and all you focus on is computer programming, versus the transformational problem solving, transformational thinking would say, okay, thinking about computer programming, but then I was just my kid and I watched how they approached this thing, and it kind of reminded me of the problem that I have on this, writing this language, and I try to apply that and you come up with a different solution, is the idea behind that. I think that's something I'm fairly good at as well, because all the time in all sorts of random situations, I will be, you know, watching a show, or I'll be, you know, at church, or I'll be doing, and something completely unrelated will make me think of something else, like a problem I have, and I feel like it kind of unlocks this, oh, I should try this different, weird, random approach, and it seems. So I would say I'm right there with you on that. The only other one that I would say that maybe I tend to do better than the average person is just, I guess, Shin is probably the easiest way to describe it. I feel like in the work setting, I do a fairly good job of helping to explain what our problems are, what needs to happen, explaining why that needs to happen, kind of getting people on board with that, dialoguing it through, and just, you know, break something down for them. And the real secret to that is just always using food metaphors, because everybody relates to them.
That's good. And I can see that. That's totally you. I like it. That's some good self-awareness.
Yeah. But like you said, I know if I was the best at any of those things, then I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast to our, you know, audience of just a million people. It'd be, you know, billions of people, obviously.
Absolutely.
All right. We are to the part of our podcast where I'm going to do a little bit of a lightning round in terms of questions. I don't think we've done it with a guest before, but I think you're up to the challenge. So four questions that you answer fairly quickly because we're running low on time.
Try my best. I'm a little long-winded sometimes, but we got this.
I'll start playing the Oscar music if needed. All right. First one is Shalomi and Jasper are both hanging from a cliff. You have the strength to pull both of them up. But if you do that, there's a 5% chance that you lose one of them. You don't know which one you would lose. Or you can choose to save just one of them with 100% certainty. Who do you pick? Or what do you pick?
Okay. Let me make this a lightning style story. This actually came up this morning. I was talking about John Wick being a masterpiece and how it's just amazing and everybody should kill everyone involved with hurting their dog. Shalomi 100% said that she would sacrifice me for Jasper, not even thinking twice about it. On the other hand, though, this was this morning. We were driving to the coffee shop. That's great. But I would unfortunately, as much of a gambler as I am, I would always choose the human over a dog. So I would take the 100% chance of saving Shalomi over Jasper, which would be unfortunate for me because then she would positively murder me right after. So I would die. But unfortunately, I would choose 100% human as much as I love Jasper.
Okay. No, I think that's probably the most technically correct answer. I'm going to pose the same question to you, but instead of Shalomi and Jasper, it's the existence of donuts and coffee.
Ooh, you know what? I'll roll the dice on that one. I save both of them at the same time. I'm not being part of fate on that one. I'll let fate decide which one leaves my life.
And I mean, there's a 95% chance that you get to keep both. So
yeah, that's something I'm okay with gambling on. I'm okay with gambling on just about everything. I just probably would not gamble on a dog against a human life. But I would do John Wick things. That was the discussion this morning, was basically about, you know, whether it's okay to kill people, and also the train dilemma, the one person versus the multitude. And I was like, I would absolutely choose to kill the one person if it saves a group. And she's like, well, what if it's me? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'd totally save you over the group. She's like, what if you didn't know it was me? And I was like, that's fine. I'd kill you because I would logically have to go with that. And then I'd find out someone put you there and I'd have to go kill them. She's like, well, you're not allowed to kill people. I was like, this situation, I would. Like, it's John Wick with a dog. I'd do it for humans, too. She didn't like my answer.
Oh, I think that's a great answer. All right. How about this one? So would you have rather been born a child star? So I think like that you've been wildly free for most of your life. So if you've ever seen Searching for Sugar Man, that's the premise of that movie. And it's a real story.
I have not seen that. I guess I need to go look into it. So my gut answer is I want to be the child star.
I'll briefly.
Oh. Yeah, give me.
Oh, I was going to. Yeah. I'll briefly explain. So Searching for Sugar Man, there's this dude who was a musician. I think he was in like Detroit or something like that. And around like the 70s, it was well before the internet. And he was not a great musician in terms of the United States, like just didn't blow up, wasn't super popular. I think he had to basically stick with his day job of being a construction worker. But in South Africa, he was as popular as like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, like same level of popularity and similar. And I think it was like New Zealand. And so he finds out way after, when he's much older, that he is just hugely famous in these other countries. So it's pretty entertaining. It's worth checking out.
So
and it's a true story.
That is something that is special about technology now, is now you'd find out, like if you were a musician, you did your thing and you get a big following in another country, you're like, oh, that's easy. And it's not too hard to get your content in front of them. 20, 30 years ago, nigh impossible. There's actually multiple people in Amarillo, and I'll send you some. You know what? Shout out to them. Sadzilla is one of them. It's a local Amarillo rapper and has almost no Amarillo following. Huge in other places of the world. And he's really, really talented. Very little local following and massive non-Amarillo following. It's kind of cool. So there's a couple people like that in Amarillo, actually. But that's wild. To answer your question, I would like the child star, because to me, that's a like, hey, you know, Harry Potter and that cast, they're doing great. Doing freaking great at our age. Like they get to do whatever they want. You know, Daniel Radcliffe just picks weird, fun movies that he wants to be a part of because he's never going to need money again. That sounds like a great trade to me. That said, if I do a bit of a risk analysis on it, it seems like 90% of these child stars get completely jacked up. And I don't know if I would take that chance. So I'm going to go with the 50. Since I already missed the childhood thing, I like who I am as a person. I would like to randomly be 50 and famous somewhere for hopefully my writing or maybe the podcast or something like that.
Yeah, make it the podcast. Then that way I get to be a part of it with you.
Yeah, come on this gravy train. Let's go. Choo-choo. It's Argentina.
Okay. In the season of Christmas, our last two questions are... If somebody was to basically, It's a Wonderful Life from your life, like vanish and have never existed in your life, who is the person that you feel like would have the most impact, would change your life the most if all of a sudden they had not been a part of it?
Wow, that's tough. If I'm allowed to not sacrifice any of my close friends or family, I'm going to say Sanderson or maybe Rothfuss because, you know, those are very influential writers to me. Or Tolkien. Oh my God, Tolkien. No Lord of the Rings. But I know that's not the spirit of the question, so never mind. Let me actually backtrack.
No. You can go that route because I'm going to flip the question. And, you know, as much as it's going to hurt you to hear this, I don't think Sanderson's life is going to change if you weren't a part of it.
He would not even notice. His cells in Amarillo would maybe drop by like 15 or 20 people, but that's about it. He wouldn't even know. His regional publisher might be like, huh, that's weird. We had a very tiny blip. We lost about $100. That's tough. You know, right now, I'd probably say Shalomi because she's probably who I spend the most time. She is who, you know, if you take my day or week or month and dice it in whatever way you want, she's going to probably have 80% of my day in terms of communication and time spent together and impact and everything like that. If you take my life on a much broader scale, you know, rolled all the way out for the full 30 years, you know, Shalomi's only been in the last couple, you know, you could basically pick some key figures from my friend group. You know, Daniel obviously would be included in this. Elementary school friends had different effects. My parents would probably be pretty big because I would, you know, I'd probably be a superhero if I was an orphan, but you know, thanks mom and dad for living. But that would probably have a drastic difference in my life is, you know, not having either one of them in some form or fashion. For the flip, since I'm trying to, you know, keep this quick on the lightning round, it would probably be, again, Shalomi if we're talking immediate timelines. If you spin it out a little bit further, I would probably guess one of my immediate family members, either my parents or one of my siblings. Probably just Matthew. I think my sisters would not notice one way or another. They'd probably be a lot happier, or at least have less trauma from their childhood. Well, sorry, guys. But, you know, my parents probably, if I had to choose between the two of them, probably my dad would have more, he'd be more affected if I vanished than my mom would be in terms of where he's at in life. I think my mom would be more emotional about it, but that might just be sexism coming through on me. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do help run your dad's business, so that's a pretty tangible impact.
He would at least have a lot less hair. Now, I know this is my lightning round, but did you, when you were forming these questions, come up with anybody besides Hillary O'Reilly?
I think the most obvious answer, potentially parents, although in reality, I think it would probably be one of my siblings more so than my parents, if we're talking long-term life impacts, because, you know, obviously my parents helped to mold and shape me. And I think there was some molding and shaping that happens going that direction as well. But I think if we're talking about who would have the most impact on, like whose life would change the most, probably Beth or Christy is my guess.
I think Christy might fall in the same camp as my sisters.
No, there are deep bonds there that nobody knows. For Christy.
Oh my goodness. Oh, did y'all catch something on fire that didn't tell any of us?
No. It's just that we sometimes text each other in Spanish. That's what it is.
See.
Okay, well, you've succeeded through the lightning round, so that means you've earned your right to story time. You knew it was coming. Even though I knew it was coming, I still struggled to come up with a story. But is there anything in particular that you want to share with the audience that has not come up in a previous podcast?
You know what? Yes, because this came up a couple of weeks ago, and there's a lot of stories that involve Daniel and I that somehow have not made it into this podcast, despite other people who have been on the podcast being involved in them. And there's also plenty of stories where we've flirted with danger, which sounds very romantic and exciting. And it mostly was just us being bad at making decisions and climbing things we shouldn't. But none of those stories are what's going to make it. The other day I was telling this, and this happens at my office a lot, and this is not the story. This is a story about the story for the moment. Periodically at the office, something will come up and I forget about how other people perceive you. And this goes for all of you listening. This is everyone we know. People do not see you the way you see yourself, and they don't know about your past or where you come from and that kind of stuff. And so in my mind, I'm an interesting guy. I think I'm cool and interesting. Okay, maybe not cool, but I think I'm interesting. And I've got some panache and I've got some magic. I have a lot of stories to tell and a lot of history, a semi-rich history for my age. But most people don't think about that or realize that because they just work with me or they just run into me at the coffee shop or whatever it is. The baristas, they don't know about Daniel and I climbing things in the, you know, Red Rocks or some of the crazy stuff we did or all the different things. So this stuff will come up at the office specifically. There's a whole group of girls that work in our customer support relations team. And they all just think I'm just, you know, this guy that is their boss. And he just kind of sits there and plays around with his laptop with his thumb up his butt kind of thing. And then I'm just kind of an average Joe kind of guy, I guess. So things will pop out every once in a while. They'll mention something. They'll ask about something. And I'll have some advice relating to one thing or another. So when they found out about the fight clubs that we used to have, that blew their minds. When they find out about the tattoos I have, for whatever reason, that really blew their minds. All these different things kind of really throw them for a trip. So one of those stories that came up, this was actually the baristas, not the girls at the office. It was Day of the Ninja, December 5th, which was roughly 20 days ago. And I'd forgotten, this is the first year that I like truly forgot about Day of the Ninja until we were going to the coffee shop. I just left the gym, picked up Shalomi, and getting our palace. And I was like, holy crap, it's December 5th. That's my favorite, like one of my favorites. Why I love the 5th, November 5th, December 5th are two of my favorite non-holiday days of the year. Because remember the 5th of November and then December 5th is Ninja Day. So Daniel and I used to celebrate December 5th a little more aggressively than either is recommended or is advised or necessary, because I'm pretty sure it was just a burger chain who made this holiday up and we picked it up from the very first podcast I remember listening to, which was Ask a Ninja. So one of these December the 5th, and I was telling Shalomi this and it blew her mind. And while I was telling her, one of the baristas was listening. You could just see they're like, who is this man? This is not the guy who comes in and spends too much money on coffee. Who is he? Like, what is happening here? I am being punked. The story, we are in high school. We're a little bit faster and more agile than at least I am now. Daniel's actually still there, I think. But we dress up as ninjas. And this was a three-part experience of bad decisions for that day. The first part, we went to the mall dressed as ninjas. And mind you, we are not that old. This was post 9/11. And the mall security is on point. I still don't know where they came from, how they saw us coming so fast, but we didn't get past the foyer in the mall before we had security on us, kicking us out. I mean, it was embarrassing. And we tried all the fast talking we could, but dudes with masks. In 2022, this probably would have actually gone better, 2021. But in 2008, this was a big no-no. So we got our asses kicked out real quick. So the mall was next to Best Buy. We're like, well, that was really anticlimactic. We had like six guys dressed as ninjas and we saw like one child that got to recognize our ninja-esque selves before being. So we went to Best Buy. In Best Buy, we saw lots of people commenting on it. We got some weird looks. We played some Guitar Hero. We had a blast. We thought it was a great time. We did our thing. We wandered around, enjoyed ourselves, and we left. And we're like, wow, why can't everybody be like Best Buy? And we'll get back to Best Buy. Don't worry. Remember that it was a good time and we had no idea anything was going on. And then later that night, we went to the skate park, almost got in multiple fights because I guess that's what you do when you see a dude in a ninja outfit is you want to fight him. Everybody ended up being cool in the end, but it was a little touch and go while we were trying to do our parkour at the skate park. And then one of the weirder things we did was one of our friends had a minivan And we got one of those curb stops that you have at parking lots. They have rebar going through them. They go into the ground and they stop your car if you go too far forward. They're very heavy, like hundreds and hundreds of pounds of heavy concrete. Somehow, like four of us were able to get into this minivan. And we went and toilet papered someone's yard as ninjas and dropped this parking stop and a toilet in their yard. And what's interesting about that is a traditional family can't move a parking stop out of their yard. You got one guy in the house, generally, that, you know, is a dad, and he could maybe do a little work. But it was heavy enough that most of the girls in the house can't move it, and this was the case with this house. So we actually had to go tell them to stop calling the police and let us remove it for them because they thought that it was something more ridiculous than we thought it was. So we took care of that. Now, mind you, this was December the 5th. December 6th, I think it was a Monday, we go back to school, and one of our friends that was associated with us but didn't do the ninja thing and didn't quite, you know, keep up with our day-to-day shenanigans is telling us, because he works at Best Buy, about the terrorists that came to Best Buy yesterday and all the police that showed up after we left and how they had like four undercover cops tailing us and everybody's freaking out and the whole place basically shut down. And we basically ruined his day because it went wild and they lost their minds and they were on high alert for terrorists all day. It was a big problem at Best Buy. And he told us this, and we're like, "Guy, that was us." His name was Micah. And we're like, "Micah, that was us." And he's like, "No." And we're like, "Yeah, we were just being ninjas." He's like, "Oh my goodness. We had like corporate on the line. They had police coming. They had a plan to take y'all down." We were like inches away from going to jail. We had no idea. So that is my story that doesn't ever seem to come up in casual conversation that did come up the other day and blew the barista in Shalomi's mind.
I forgot about half of that story, which is part of, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it just goes to show how unaware we were of the impacts of our actions.
It was a fun day, though. That was a fun day.
Oh, it was a blast. I definitely, you know, wouldn't do it now, but I'm glad that we did it then. Glad we did it for the story.
A slightly more trigger-happy undercover cop might have taken us out. Good times.
Oh, man. That's a great story. So is your challenge to be more ninja-like and to go and give Best Buy your business because of all of the terrorist activities that we incited as children?
As much as I would like to recommend that to people as a challenge, I don't think that's a good idea. Instead, let me lean into something we talked about earlier. You talked about that 1%. What do you think you are better at than most of the world? I want people to think about that. And one, recognize that you probably aren't the best person in the world at that thing you think you are. But that is okay, and it's really important to lean into that skill. If you have something like that, that's what you should be building up. That's what you should be working on. So figure out what that is and make a plan on how to improve it. That's my challenge for you guys.
I love it. That's a great challenge. I will be doing the same. I mean, let's be honest. I already do that every day. So never mind. I'm not going to do your challenge. I already do your challenge all the time.
All right. Sounded almost bad. I don't know how to take that.
No, it's a good thing. I promise. Well, thank you for coming by. Oh, man. Well, thanks for coming by your podcast, Andrew, our podcast. It was very fun to turn the table on you to get to ask some of these questions. And, you know, I think we did a good job of starting pretty serious and getting pretty goofy by the end. I mean, closing out with running around Best Buy as ninjas. You can't get much goofier than that.
I am worried about Shalomi murdering me if she listens to this one, though, because I don't think she wants the world to know how little I mean to her compared to Jasper.
Yeah, you kind of did the double there because you dropped that and then you said, I would, you know, choose the option to 100% save Shalomi. So you really painted yourself as the hero in the relationship.
Well, a hero does what a hero does. And usually that's what Andrew does. That's my motto.
Yes, living with valor. All right, everybody. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. This is Dead by Tomorrow. We hope that you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Whenever you're listening to this, if you're listening to it in July, well, you know, Christmas is halfway here, so it still applies. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate you all.